Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. This is Abi Dawji and this is The Big Picture, broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam and Radio Al-Ansar. Ahlan wa sahlan. And how's it? Everything okay? Hey, tamam? Yar, this Joburg is cold, ne? Good heavens. Did you hear that? I said ne. What does it mean? Where does it come from? Is it English or Afrikaans? I mean, Joburg too long, ne? There I go again. Next, I'll be saying, I'll throw you with a stone, eh? Or maybe I'll say, borrow me your pen. Or maybe this one. Off the lights there. And the worst one is, buy me a packet of crisps. Crisps? Crisps? What the hell is that? It's Lay's chips, Habibi. Or maybe less irritating is crisps. But crisps? No, 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 no. Aibo. And all this upsets me so much and makes me so hot and bothered that I feel like drinking a tumbler of cold mineral and all. But still on the subject of cold in Joburg, I was arguing with one fella that the gas heater, I told him that the gas heater is the best thing to keep warm. And he was insisting that a fan heater is the best. I disagreed very strongly and said that he is just talking a lot of hot air. Did you get that, Mota? No? Never mind, your flow will explain it to you. Okay, so that was a bit of a weak one, eh? But hey, it's original, okay? How's this one? It's so cold that I saw a politician with his hands in his own pocket. Wasn't that just brilliant? Okay, so how's things, eh? How was your Friday? Did you have dal and rice? Yes, some people in Joburg call it dal chawal. So did you have the works? Dal, rice, papar, alu fry, soji, and maybe a piece of fried fish. And some lekker gajar achar. That is a real Friday charm. And some people even have a few fried or crumbed chicken legs on the side. Yep, chicken legs on the side. I've got an absolutely brilliant recipe for crumbed legs that I got from the internet. Preparation time is 15 minutes. Cooking time is 10 minutes. So get a pen quickly and take this down. 1 4-ounce packet of saltine crackers, crushed, half cup oatmeal, 1 teaspoon minced onions, 2 teaspoons salt, 1 tablespoon ground black pepper, 2 eggs, 2 cups of veg oil, vegetable oil, half cup milk. All this together and roll the leg in it and fry. There you are, folks. Easy peasy, eh? Yummy. Well, it's great to add the side dish to your family dal lunch, dal chawal. But wait, hang on. This may not be everyone's cup of tea, so to speak. Why? Because, dear listeners, this is a recipe for frog's legs, eh? Yes, folks, a great delicacy. And you better rush out very quickly and stock up in your freezer, because it looks like very soon frogs' legs will become extinct. Listen to this from the Guardian newspaper. A voracious appetite for frogs' legs among the French and Belgians is driving amphibian species in Indonesia, Turkey, and Albania to the brink of extinction, according to a new report. Europe imports up to 200 million, mostly wild frogs, every year and contributes to a serious depletion of native species abroad in the process. Scientists estimate that the Anatolian water frog could be extinct in Turkey by 2032 because of over-exploitation, while other species, such as the Albanian water frog, are now threatened. Export quotas for Indonesia Javan frog have also been withdrawn in a move that conservationists suspect may be due to population depletion. Indonesia provides an estimated 74% of frogs imported to the EU. In Africa, less than 250 mature Togo slippery frogs are thought to survive, while the giant African bullfrog may already be extinct in Swaziland. There has been a call for an end to cruel practices such as the cutting off of frogs' legs with axes or scissors without anesthetic. Ooh, yeah. Chopping off the legs while still alive. Anyway, dear listeners, you better rush off, as I said, and get your stocks. Now listen here, ladies. Just when the bully has a mouthful of agni today, don't you dare tell him that you'll be serving lekkar tandoori tikka frog's legs with the dal chawal next Friday. Yes, sir, sir. You ladies can be so cruel. I think I got a frog stuck in my throat. Well, the frogs are not only becoming extinct, but some of the frogs are completely crazy. Ekdam kronk. I'm, of course, referring to the French, who are often called frogs. And now I understand why. Let me read from a news report. The city of Grenoble in France, led by a mayor from the Greens Party, voted last month to allow women to wear burkinis in public pools after campaigning by local activists. The city also voted to allow women to swim topless as part of a broader relaxation of swimwear rules. Did you get that? They will be allowing, the mayor decided to allow women to wear burkinis in public pools. And the city also voted to allow women to swim topless as part of a broader relaxation of swimwear rules. So, guess what happened after this? Well, the big shot politician known as the prefect for the province of Grenoble said, "No, no, this is not allowed. I will cancel the vote." So let me tell you what he was upset with. The burkini was banned, but topless was okay. I kid you not, eh? I kid you not. And the top administrative court in France, known as the Council of State, upheld the prefect's decision, saying in a statement, "The Grenoble vote was made to satisfy the religious demand and harms the neutrality of public service." Harms the neutrality of public service. So if you take off your clothes, you are no threat to public service. But if you cover your body, then public service is affected. You know, they're talking such a lot of sheer nonsense. I feel like taking a shambok and giving them some lekkar chutney on the frog's legs. Anyway, let's see what's happening on the local scene. Big things, Habibi, big things. For the small sum of 1 billion rands, Judge Raymond Zondo told us what we already know, that the Chorwan virus pandemic had destroyed the country. Wholesale looting on an industrial scale. But to be fair to Zondo, he delivered in great detail how the Chorwans milked the country dry. I came across a statement in the judge's report that made me fall off my chair, Habibi, fall off my chair. And it says here, the Gupta brothers used a complex web of local and overseas laundromats, meaning money laundering, overseas laundromats, particularly in the United Arab Emirates, Hong Kong, and China, to disguise, wash, and dissipate at least 15.5 billion rands that they stole from South African taxpayers over several years. Did you get that? 15.5 billion! They took out of the country. Can anyone tell me how many zeros there are in a billion? How many zeros? Anyone? Hey, you people are quite hopeless. There you are again. Well, actually, I don't also know how many zeros there are. But, you know, some thoughts came to mind as I read some sections of the report. Firstly, I have always held the view that the whole tamasha of state capture would not have happened on the scale that it did if Dudu Zane was not involved. This is what I was thinking. The first step in the Gupta plan was to capture Dudu Zane. He's a very smart guy, very intelligent and articulate. So they brought him into their company, Sahara Computers. What an absolutely brilliant move. And so the doors were ready to open. This is what Zondo said. Zondo said, Mr. Tony Gupta's idea was that the government officials and the SOE, state institution, officials would have realized that through Mr. Duduzane Zuma, he had easy access to Mr. Duduzane Zuma's father, President Zuma. In other words, they better cooperate, because otherwise, if they did not cooperate, their non-cooperation could be reported to President Zuma, said Zondo. The state capture report revealed Duduzane was present when bribes were offered at the Gupta Saxon World residence. The evidence, according to Zondo, further showed how Duduzane may have been central to the capture of several SOEs, because he stood to gain personally and played a role in manipulating the public narrative on state capture. Mr. D. Zuma also seems to have been involved in appointing key individuals in SOEs who facilitated the capture of those institutions. He seems to have acted as a conduit between the Guptas and government, particularly his father. So there you are. Duduzane was, as Zondo says, the conduit, meaning the bridge, the link between the Guptas and the government, and of course with Zuma as the head. Yes, of course, we did have corruption on a large scale previously. Previously, there was the arms deal and other instances, huge things, corruption. But the 9 years of corruption was on another level. Almost every state entity was looted. And openly, the media was reporting most of it as it happened. And now to the second point, something that I was thinking of, and something that I already mentioned a few times. During the 9 years, while the looting was underway, opposition parties were reporting instances of corruption. Right? They stood up in parliament. And, of course, they were shouted down by the ANC. The ANC protected Zuma and made excuses for him. Remember the swimming pool that suddenly became a fire pool? Here is what Zondo said. What needs to be said about the ANC and its contribution to state capture is that it opposed proposals by opposition parties for parliament to establish public inquiries to investigate allegations of wrongdoing by the Guptas. The commission found if the ANC caucus had not protected Zuma and removed him from office, the Guptas would probably have fled South Africa as they did in 2018 and therefore would not have looted the way they did. The ANC's further contribution to state capture is that when opposition parties table motions of no confidence in President Zuma because of the allegations of corruption and state capture and what the Guptas were reported to be doing, such as summoning ministers to their home, the ANC protected President Zuma and ensured that he remained in office as president, which also meant that the Guptas got more time to pursue state capture and continue to loot taxpayers' money. Zondo said the ANC must take responsibility for this. So, there you are, folks. As clear as you can get, the ANC aided and abetted state capture. Would it be too extreme to say that it was a mafia-type organization? Would it be too extreme to say that our government was a kleptocracy, a government of looters? Would that be too strong? Well, after the report by Zondo blaming the whole ANC as a party, the only honorable thing, the only decent thing for the MPs to do is to resign and never stand for public office again. That is the morally right thing to do. Isn't that so? Will they do it? Well, to quote a prominent statesman, and the finger is pointed at the second in charge after Zuma, our Cyril Bai. Yes, she's already in the soup, Already in the soup. The second word, Manjra Zalim. So far, so good. Actually, so far, not good, especially to hide Uplang. Zondo said that Rama should have exposed state capture while he was deputy president under Zuma. That's what Zondo said. Zondo reported that Rama said that he had, you have to listen to this, in this report of Zondo, he said that Ramaphosa said that he had no first-hand knowledge of any wrongdoing, only media reports. Ramaphosa said that he had no, while he was deputy president under Zuma, he said that he had no first-hand knowledge of any wrongdoing, only he saw media reports. Did you get that, folks? No first-hand knowledge of any wrongdoings, only media reports. Aye, Bo Cyril. Aye, Kona. No. You didn't know what was going on right under your nose? You were right there in the kitchen and you didn't know what was cooking? For 9 years, you read the newspapers and that's it. What were you doing? You were dosing or what? Come on, man. Come on. What you take us for? What do you take us for? Anyway, Cyril gave another wishy-washy answer. He said that he was working from the inside to stop corruption. Firstly, you said that you didn't know about wrongdoing, but you were working from the inside to stop it. Except my brain is getting strained there trying to make sense of it. So he was working quietly to stop corruption, he said. Working from inside, because if he came out strongly, very boldly and loudly in public, that he saw the corruption there, he said that right at the start, that would have been the end of him. He would have been booted out. So, dear listeners, let us just ponder on this point. Okay, let's just think about what he said, or the whole issue of why he didn't come out. On the one hand, we say that he should have come out strongly and said that Zuma was corrupt right at the start of state capture when he found out, way back, when the Gupta started their nonsense. Well, of course, that's the right thing to do, correct? And as I said, he would be out immediately. And he would have probably gone retired to Pala Pala or what? That's what it's called, the farm. And maybe sit there counting his dollars. And he would have been completely forgotten, making no impact after that on the political situation. So think about this. He didn't speak out. And when the time came, when Zuma was booted out, and then Cyril became president. So if Cyril wasn't there when Zuma was booted out, if he wasn't there to take over, we would have had someone else from the Zuma camp leading us today. And that, ladies and gentlemen, would have been a major disaster. Major disaster. And if you remember, at Nasrec, Cyril got voted in by the skin of his teeth. He just made it because the vultures were waiting to get him. And one commentator put it very well. I read this yesterday. He said, certainly it seems extremely unlikely Ramaphosa would have made it as far as Nasrec, let alone beat Zuma in those fraught final hours. With Ramaphosa removed from the picture in 2015 or 2016, we would now be 3 years into the first term of Zuma's puppet. Tonight, for example, hosting a banquet to celebrate the appointment of Duduzile Zuma as finance minister and Duduzani Zuma as energy. But Duduzile Zuma is, of course, Duduzani's twin sister. So the finance minister would be Duduzani Zuma as energy minister, and the Zondo report steals forever in a safe with no key. It is absolutely true that Ramaphosa should have done much more. It is also absolutely true that we'd be infinitely worse off if he had. Ah, the paradoxes that this goddamn organization keeps throwing at us. That's what the commentator wrote. So did you get it? Did you get it? Rama would have disappeared into political oblivion had he spoken up, and a Zuma chamcha would have come in, and state capture would have continued. But you know what? The game is not over yet. The war is still on. Firstly, there's an all-out effort to get Cyril out. And the Uplang thing may be the nail in his coffin, may just sink him. Powerful voices may... and many of them are tainted with corruption, are gunning for Cyril, and he could be out. Yes, he could be out. He's in a very weak position at the moment. And so it's not unlikely that Zuma's boys would come in. Well, to be more accurate, I should say Zuma's boy, Duduzani. Listen to this news report. Duduzani, son of former President Jacob Zuma, has revealed that he wants to be the next leader of the ANC. According to an article by the Report newspaper, Duduzani has said that he wants to challenge President Cyril Ramaphosa for the presidency of the ANC. You know, this guy is very, 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 very sharp. He's got charisma. Magnetic personality, and he knows how to play his cards right. He speaks to the young people about their problems, how he's going to solve them, and also addresses the concerns of the poor. He told the Report newspaper that his father is innocent, and if he were elected as president, he would implement his father's policies, such as free tertiary education, land expropriation, and nationalization of the Reserve Bank. Now, where have we heard this before? Huh? I think it sounds very much like the Red Brigade, the EFF. So, tell the people what they like to hear, and you can get the vote. Here's another thing. You need pots of money in order to campaign to be elected. Well, I can easily speculate. I'm speculating that state capture money will be available to drive the election campaign. And so, dear South Africans, dear South Africans, fasten your seatbelts. You are in for a roller coaster ride. And in the end, perhaps the 1 billion Zondo report will be sealed and put on a shelf, and the Chorwan epidemic will continue. Dark clouds ahead, Habibi. Dark clouds. Okay. Let me leave it there, boss. Okay. Let's see what's happening overseas. By the way, I will be in the Middle East next week, inshallah, Friday, with a group of about 100, inshallah, for 2 weeks. The word is... Altogether now, Majah. Juma in Al-Aqsa, inshallah, Eid and Qurbani in the Holy Lands, inshallah. Lots of tours coming up for the rest for the next 6 months. Okay, let's see how things work on the international political scene. You know, there's an expression that goes like this. There are no permanent friends or permanent enemies, only permanent interests. Did you get that? There are no permanent friends or permanent enemies, only permanent interests. If you are looking for things like principles, you know, people stick to their principles, or morality, or honor, or decency in world affairs, forget it. It doesn't exist. Self-interest is the main motivation. Self-interest. What is good for me is important. For very long, we pinned our hopes on Erdogan of Turkey, a straight talker, a man of integrity, a true Muslim leader. In May 2010, he was very, very, very angry when Israel stormed the Turkish-led the flotilla. Remember Mavi Marmara, the Turkish ship, which was heading for Gaza with humanitarian aid. Israel stormed it. 19 people died and dozens were injured. And Erdogan was very cross, very cross. He said this incident was an attack on international law, the conscience of humanity, and world peace. This bloody massacre by Israel on ships that were taking humanitarian aid in Gaza deserves every kind of curse. Woo! Huh? Strong words indeed. Strong words indeed. May 2021, reported in the AFP, Agence France Press, President Recep Erdogan on Monday called Israel a terror state that kills children and is only satisfied by sucking their blood. Whoa. Wow. Let me read that again. May 2021, just over a year ago, reported by AFP, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan on Monday called Israel a terror state that kills children and is only satisfied by sucking their blood. Powerful stuff, powerful. And now, fast forward to this week, 2 days ago. Turkish Foreign Minister Cavusoglu praised constructive talks with his Israeli counterpart, Yair Lapid, after the two met in Jerusalem on Wednesday. Cavusoglu is the first senior Turkish official to visit Israel in 15 years. The talks come amid efforts to thaw relations and improve diplomatic and economic cooperation after years of tension. Following the meeting, the foreign ministers outlined a list of measures to improve diplomatic security and economic relations. They agreed to renew a discussion that would enable Israeli Airlines to fly to Turkey, as well as relaunch the activity of a bilateral joint economic commission. At the press conference, Cavusoglu said, I hope I'm pronouncing the name properly. The foreign minister said Turkey was a top trading partner for Israel, as well as a popular destination for Israeli tourists. Wow. Isn't that amazing? Huh? Mamu? Amazing, right? Right. So let's go back to October 2018. The journalist Jamal Khashoggi was murdered by Saudi agents in Turkey. Hit squad. Right? Erdogan was very angry. Ooh, very, very angry. He said the order to kill journalist Jamal Khashoggi came from the highest levels of the Saudi government, Turkish President Erdogan said in the Washington Post on Friday, and he called for the puppet masters to be unmasked. An advisor to Erdogan said last week that MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, as the crown prince is informally known, had blood on his hands over Khashoggi's killing. The bluntest comments yet from someone linked to Erdogan about Riyadh's de facto ruler in connection with the death. Well, nothing happened. What happened after? Nothing. Nothing. So fast forward to Wednesday this week. Let's see what we've got here now. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan welcomed the Crown Prince at the presidential palace in Ankara on Wednesday with a ceremony that included a 21-gun salute before being met by Turkish ministers. A statement released the Turkish presidency hours after the Crown Prince's arrival said the two countries agreed to deepen consultations and cooperate on regional issues. Wonderful, right? Khashoggi is dead. Let's forget him and move forward. And self-interest is the word. Turkey is suffering hyperinflation. And after Erdogan's angry words about the murder of Khashoggi, Saudi Arabia launched an unofficial embargo on Turkish imports into Saudi Arabia or exports to the country, stopping $5 billion worth in bilateral trade. So it's important to kiss and make up, Habibi. Important. Self-interest, Habibi. And one other fellow also forgot Khashoggi. I told you about him. Joe Biden, when he was standing for elections to be president, was very, very angry at the murder. He called Saudi Arabia a pariah state, meaning a state that is rotten, that is evil, that should be completely shunned, isolated, ostracized. Pariah state. Well. Next month, President Biden will be visiting Saudi Arabia. He will ask MBS to pump more oil at a lower price, now that Russia has closed off its taps and petrol prices have rocketed in the United States. Self-interest, Habibi. Self-interest. That's what this is all about. And of course, after that, Biden will go to Israel. No word will be spoken about the murder of American citizen Shirin Abu Akleh. His whole visit to the region is to beef up, as they say, Israel's security. What does that mean? It means that he will tell the Arab leaders to be nice to Israel. The word is normalization, abnormal relations with Israel. So, he's concerned about Israel's security. What about security for the Palestinians, Habibi? Ah, sorry, man. They don't matter in the scheme of things. The Palestinians cannot serve the interests of all these Arab leaders or America. So they just don't matter at all. Right, let's see how much of time we have left. All right. Let me see if I can. I came across a wonderful article written by Imran Bakas. Imran Bakas, as you know, he is the Dr. Imran Bakas is a senior research associate at ASRI. Right, so this is what he says. The right-wing authoritarianism that has surged in much of the world in recent years was defeated in the U.S. and has been dealt a body blow in Colombia. The buffoonish Boris Johnson is hanging on to power by the skin of his teeth in the U.K. But the hard right duo of Jair Bolsonaro and Narendra Modi are still in office. In Brazil, there is hope Bolsonaro will soon be ousted by a returning Lula da Silva. But in India, Modi and his fascist Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP, are well entrenched. Along with its authoritarianism and support for a terrifying, rapacious form of capitalism, the BJP's fundamental project, directly influenced by European fascism, is to make India a Hindu state. Minorities of all kinds are under threat, increasingly treated as illegitimate interlopers. The world stands appalled as the Indian state demolishes the homes of Muslims. Muslims are said to have led protests against the government after recent Islamophobic comments against the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his wife Aisha by the leading members of the BJP. This led to several Muslim countries calling for an apology and pulling Indian goods off their shelves. This has given the government an excuse to escalate the misrepresentation of Muslims as the fifth column in the Indian society. As images of homes being demolished are beamed across the world, one can't help but point out the striking similarity to the actions of Israeli forces who continue to demolish the homes of ordinary citizens and activists. In 2021, close to 1,000 homes were demolished. Both India and Israel have engaged in atrocities for decades. The world remembers, for example, the horrific anti-Muslim violence led by Modi as Chief Minister of Gujarat in 2002. Today, WhatsApp videos of the public lynching of Muslims and Dalit Hindus are regularly circulated in India. Indian Islamophobia can be traced back to the formation of the Hindu nationalist paramilitary organization, the Rashtriya, it's the RSS in 1925. In 1929, RSS intellectual Madhav Rao Sadashiva Rao Gulwalka, a Nazi sympathizer, said Muslim culture was incompatible with Indian culture. He openly admired Adolf Hitler's final solution. There are documented links between the RSS and the Hindu Mahasabha in India, a well-known and influential Hindu organization. Of course, many Hindus around the world are fiercely critical of the BJP, just as many Muslims are fiercely critical of the leadership of Saudi Arabia, and many Jews oppose the Israeli state. But Hindu fascism has wide support in India itself and in diaspora communities in places such as California. Modi was rapturously received by some in South Africa in 2016 and 2018. All forms of fascism must be opposed everywhere, whether in states such as India or in movements outside of the state, such as Operation Dudula in South Africa. Just as there is global solidarity with the oppressed in Palestine, so too globally solidarity is needed with minorities oppressed in India. We cannot be selective in our solidarity and which states we call to order, just as the Israeli and the Saudi government need to be called to order, so does India's. A human rights catastrophe is happening in India and must be opposed by decent people. There you are. Words of Dr. Imran Bakas, Senior Researcher, Research Associate of ASRI. All right, let's see what else we've got for you now. I think we've come to the end of the program, but before I go, here's some words of wisdom by Alfred E. Newman of Mad Magazine fame. He said, most people are so lazy they don't even exercise good judgment. Words of wisdom. Getting old is when a narrow waist and a broad mind change places. Nowadays, a balanced diet is when every McDonald's nugget weighs the same. A lawyer is someone who writes a 40-page document and calls it a brief. Elections are when people find out what politicians stand for and politicians find out what people will fall for. These days, the only time politicians tell the truth is when they call each other liars. You know the honeymoon is over when your dog brings your slippers and your wife barks at you. Ooh. Right, let's see now. You know, there's load shedding right now in Waterfall area, where I am now, in the Midland. But But let's see if there is light at the end of the tunnel. Here's a quick one. Sylvie sends a WhatsApp message to Ronnie. You know, I really hate you. Really hate you. And Ronnie replied, why? What I did? And Sylvie replied, you gave my granny murku to eat when you know she got no teeth and all. This is Abi Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.